Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Code Brew. My name is Joseph. We've got Brandon, Andrew, and Dane here.
Hello.
What's up?
Dane's here, we promise. This week, how's everybody doing? What's going on? What's going on at work? What's going on in your lives?
Good start. Finished up my Java class. That was tons of fun, and I hope that I never have to write it again. on to physics now. So, Dane, I'll probably be reaching out to you to help me with my homework.
Yes.
As far as work goes, I've just been pumping out new features lately, which is a lot of fun because basically all new features are getting built in TypeScript as we go through and we migrate everything to TypeScript anyway. So
nice.
It's been a pretty good time, but yeah, nothing too crazy. Went to When We Were Young. That was sick. 80,000 emo kids. It's a sight to behold. Got to see Bright Eyes. Joey, I know you're a big Bright Eyes fan. The lead singer was a piece of work. He was drunk on stage.
I mean, is it really a emo concert if there's not someone
dude,
up
on
there
the weekend I went, he came out and was like, you guys would be so mad if you knew how much I was getting paid right now.
I think that's hilarious. Like, I think that's honestly hilarious.
We get it. You fancy yourself the Hemingway of programming, okay? Jeez. Nice.
God. Well, some days I do want to kill myself because of how bad I am. So
wow, too soon. Okay.
Yeah, too soon. Let's chill out. Jeez. This is a PG show, Joey.
No, it's not.
You're not the Bukowski of programming, okay?
Good Lord.
We do mark the episode as explicit, so. Just in case.
Anyway, Brandon, what's going on in your life?
Well, today was fun. I woke up this morning to a meeting. I can talk about this because by the time this comes out, it'll be public. But I woke up to a meeting, a mandatory meeting, which we never have mandatory meetings. I was like, uh-oh. Immediately, alarm bells are going off. Get in there, and they just cut to the chase. Announced several layoffs on the company, several of the leadership team leaving. It's pretty crazy. Luckily, I'm not getting laid off, but I do know several good coworkers that are unfortunately leaving, so that was pretty sad. But on a lighter note, I finally took my AWS exam this week, passed it, got the cert, so that felt good.
Let's go.
Woo. Nice, yeah. Man.
Just in time to just chill and relax for the holidays, and then I don't know what I'm going to do next year. We'll see. How about you, Dane?
Just working on the back end, reworking some data mistakes. I mean, they're mistakes now. At the time, they were the best possible decision. I don't ever make mistakes. We were reworking some of our data structure because of the relationships between data and like the application has changed. So got familiar with Elixir's Ecto migrations before I was kind of just writing dirty scripts and not doing proper versioning and stuff like that, like I should have been doing. But we dove into like the Ecto migration, which is really neat. It's like a cool little thing that's built inside of Phoenix and Ecto, I guess, depending on however that stack lines up. But anyways, it was neat. I really enjoy writing Elixir, and I enjoy it more and more the more that I use it. I wish I had more reason to be in the back end more frequently so I could write more Elixir.
Yeah, it's been fun. This week's been doing pair programming with Dane, and just going today's Wednesday. So yeah, for about a day and a half, we really just kind of struggled through. Dane did. I don't know how. I don't think I was of help at all. But kind of struggled through a data migration with Postgres that was just insane and weird. And I've heard the term data migrations before, and like I don't know in what context, but they just kind of seemed and still do seem like a black box, I guess. But it was cool to kind of at least go through the process of kind of demystifying it a little bit and understanding the like basically version control for your database outside of what we're doing with DigitalOcean, because what DigitalOcean is doing is not, I mean, it's a really short term kind of fallback. And so it was kind of cool to just something I didn't even had not crossed my mind or just like didn't realize was part of the process. So that's been really cool. Nice. Sorry, my brain just like fried for a second, but cool. Okay, so this week we're discussing underrated dev skills. And I think this should be fun. Could include things that are technical or non-technical. And Brandon, you want to kick us off?
Sure. These are like small things that are somewhat underrated, that are sometimes overlooked, especially I think by beginners. And you'll see a lot of seniors who have these skills, kind of what makes them a senior in some respect, or at least part of it, in my opinion. But the first one I'm going to say is like reading and being able to synthesize documentation quickly I'm going to extend that. Actually, I'm not going to say not even documentation, but code itself. Like when you're thrown into a new code base, being able to like pick up like, okay, these are the patterns. These are the way that things are structured and this is how things are done. And being able to like adapt your code style to the code base, this code style is, I think a good skill to have.
Ooh, I like that one. Yeah, there's definitely, because especially if you have like architecture set up by a certain senior or something like that, like it, like some people, I'm sure there are code bases out there that look very nice with function declaration, like ES5 style and JavaScript. And like, if I walked into that, as much as I love the fatty arrow and how I exclusively use the fatty arrow, I'd respect that. I'd be like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, code style is a huge thing. And like, yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of like, one of those things in programming that's kind of like a community thing more so than like individual, but sometimes like there can be context switching going from one person's code to another, and like I think there's a little bit of overhead in that.
Yeah,
that's it. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna add, I think also for documentation, like being able to just like look over something, be like, okay, here's the general gist of things, here's how I can quickly apply it, here's what's important to me right now. If I'm looking for something, how to find it quickly, which is kind of up to, you know, hopefully the documentation is structured well, but being able to like quickly jump between and find things that are important.
I kind of want to, yeah, I like that you brought that up, because that is something I'm definitely guilty of. And I'm actually kind of scared that everything that's going to come out tonight is just like a list of things that I'm like, yeah, that's something I don't do, or like I definitely am guilty of doing the opposite, or whatever. But I think this kind of goes in hand with what you said, but while I think the quickness is important, I think something that is also helpful is slowing down in certain contexts. Like knowing where to source something is definitely, and like get to it quickly is definitely a skill. And like, but when you mention like the synthesizing reading documentation or code, I know for me, I'm very guilty of feeling this like anxiety of like needing to have the answer like right away, or just like when it's the first thing I Google or something, I need to be able to be like this. Oh, this is the thing. But I find that several times throughout just the last few months, just slowing down and just being like, hey, just calm yourself down, take a deep breath, and just also read the thing, synthesizing. And it's the first part of what you said. That means it's an active thing, but part of that is just like slowing down and just and reading, getting the information from that is going to be useful. And in order to glean that and figure out if it is going to be useful, you have to read it and you just have to like digest it. And I think sometimes I can, I don't know about you guys, but I'm definitely guilty of just, just going a little too fast and thinking that I need to, find the paragraph that's right there or whatnot. So I think that is something that definitely is helpful for me is trying to slow down.
Yeah, I love that. Like knowing what speed to go at, especially if it's a new subject or a foreign subject that you're not very well versed in, being able to like, okay, how does this work? And being able to like build a model of, all the different, things that this tool or framework or library can do, and then being able to apply it.
Yeah, I'd say that's alongside that is kind of like picking out the philosophy of something that you're learning. Like I take a lot of time on the front end when I'm hopping into a new framework or something and being like, well, there's a reason somebody created this, right? Like, let's say it's another JavaScript framework, right? There was some problem they were trying to solve and they didn't like the way it was currently being solved and like what's kind of the ethos of what they're doing. And usually all of the documentation will center around that concept as well. Like sometimes that can bleed into almost like all of the different modules or all the different potential ways you can deal with the same problem, right? I mean, if you get like HTTP frameworks, people will be like, okay, I have these feelings about concurrency or this feeling about how we should handle routing and stuff, and kind of like tapping into that. Then after that, like, I feel like the rest of it goes a little bit more smoothly, but it's not like a fingers on the keyboard type of thing. You're reading there sitting like, it's like it's very slow paced. Like it's not, I don't know where your burn down chart is going to be after that, but your code will be a lot better.
Yeah. I like that. It's always interesting, like seeing the different philosophies of like different languages too, where you have like a language like Go, where it was created with the purpose of like, should be one obvious way to do things. And Python 2 is like that. And then there will be a library that's like, no, we're just going to give you a bunch of tools and it's up to you to pick the right tool. And you can solve a problem in multiple ways. And you got to figure out how, like, being the differences between stuff like that is always interesting.
One technical one that has been kind of rears its head, I mean, really every day, but kind of a few weeks ago, or a couple months ago, maybe it like became pretty clear, but being really like being adept in the command line is super.
I have super, that on here as well. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's something that it wasn't as much of a focus in like it kind of was like, I don't want to say, I don't know. I doubt David is ever going to listen to this podcast, but if he did, I'm sure there was a day or probably the first day of class, I'm sure he said something about like, you want to be like work in your command line. I did, I built some good habits, I think, with certain things, but I didn't realize how powerful the command line is. You're probably, dear listener, you're going to probably never go an episode without hearing this. Sorry, but Vim definitely made me realize like being how like powerful the command line is, and just like learning, like just like little things that will come up when we're working, and Dane will be like, oh, like, did you know you could do this? Or he'll be like, oh, type this. And I'm just like, I just blows my mind how much, like, just even recently, I think we talked about this maybe last episode, but being able to like just create your own GitHub repository from the command line and like never even need to leave it is really cool. And it saves time, but it's also just, I don't know, it's just kind of cool to understand the structure of the stuff that's in your computer. That I I don't know. It feels like it can kind of be a mystery sometimes, or at least working on a Mac, it can sometimes. So I've just found that being able to navigate through your command line is really cool, and it's incredibly helpful.
Yeah, not even just like traversing file hierarchies, but like I would also say like familiarity with like Bash or ZSH or whatever you use for your scripting tool. There's so many little things where it's like one-offs where it's like, I want to run like FFmpeg, for example, which is like a little library that will, so like we do Dungeons and Dragons, right? So I download all these videos from YouTube. Explicit. Can't copyright me. That's how that works. So anyways, I download like little like ambient soundtracks and stuff like that from YouTube. And I just want to strip them of the video and just, you know, I'll put the audio in like a WebM format. I can just write a quick little for loop in Bash, right? And run this little script. It'll go through and run this command on every file inside of a folder with like this certain extension. It's really, really, really powerful. And that takes like seconds, you know, 23 seconds. There's so many times where I think about like, oh, I really want to be able to like, you know, this would be much easier if I could program it, but then I got to like build up an environment. I got to like NPM install. I got to like, if I'm using, you know, whatever, I got to like have file IO if I'm in Elixir, whatever it is. It's kind of like, it's a lot. It's kind of more of a pain than just writing a really quick Bash script, because you know, it's a programming language that was Bash or ZSH or whatever, but it's a programming language that was specifically meant to navigate and move around your computer. And it's like very, almost like a DSL in that domain specific language in that sense. And I think I wish, and I'm not good at it. Like I'm not good at Sed or Awk or any of those like deeper tools. And I every minute I invest in, I get a lot out, and it's a wildly underdeveloped skill. Cause then you have like plebs like Andrew who are like, why would I use anything but VS Code? And it's just like, you don't even know. Like you think the earth is round. I mean, come on.
Please, dude.
Wake up, sheeple. Use Bash.
I want that as a shirt. That's amazing. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think definitely command line is one of those under, it's just, you only have so much time to cover that in a coding bootcamp. And I think it's not even really like covered in colleges either. Cause I know there's like a course of like the missing things that CS doesn't teach you. And like they go over the command line and Vim and Git and all those things. It's like, these are essential everyday tools that you're going to be using every day as a developer, you know, to run your environment, to like do, you know, one-off deploys or things like that, or rollbacks and like things that you just need to take care of real quick, I think is super valuable.
Yeah, they're also like, I mean, you have to, all the GUIs, all that stuff is built on top of the command line, right? They're like OS primitives. So you could imagine how powerful having like access to the primitives of an operating system are. And they aren't quite primitives, obviously. It's just an analogy. But I'm just saying that like, everything else built on top of it is an abstraction. Like it still is at the very core, like understanding file systems as a hierarchy, like, and then especially being in Linux, like literally everything is a file, and kind of like understanding that and having a more intuitive sense of that has definitely made me a better developer. It's a wildly underrated skill. Like, honestly, if somebody like was kind of struggling along and like in like, I don't know, Python or something is probably a bad example, or like with some like abstract thing and they were just like smashing the command line to get to it though, I'd be like, well, you can learn Python.
I think I have one that's kind of related, but it's being able to do what I'm going to dub dirty data analytics, which is, I'm not a data analyst. I'm not a data scientist, not a machine learning engineer. But I do know enough like matplotlib and enough like numpy, as Joey likes to call it. Enough of those little data science tools that are just super powerful and that you can use to do like quick little graphs. Or, you know, the other day I dumped one of our data sets into a CSV and then rendered it into a graph real quick. Like, I'm sure there's a better way to do that, but I was able to do it in like 30 minutes just real quick. And it was one of those things where it's like, cool, now I can just leave this Python script on my computer. And if I ever need to do it again, I can just pull the data again and run the script and my graph is there now. Which I think things like that are really useful if you're trying to like convey a message or you're trying to collect data and like make decisions based off of it is really useful. SQL in particular, I'll add, being able to like query a data set and like do a quick aggregation of like, oh, okay, there's our X percentage to, you know, that our users are doing.
Yeah, I mean, in addition to that, like, it's nice having access to, like, I use PSQL a lot to just kind of do those quick things. Once again, like, why the command line comes into it, it can be nice. Like, I don't necessarily want to spin up something with an ORM or, like, even, like, or even sending raw queries through programming. Like, those database models tend to be really opinionated and rightfully so, right? Because they have to make it fit within the confines of the language. But, like, just being able to hop into the CLI tool, PSQL or whatever, read a manual, know what commands I can run, like, and it makes it really nice for those one-offs, because there's a lot of times where I want to write code, but I don't really need to script anything. It's not something I'm going to do once. So yeah, I totally agree. Like, being able to do that, and, you know, obviously, like, I'm a business decision maker where I'm at, and it is an incredibly valuable tool to get a, you know, somewhat inaccurate data. So, I mean, I understand that it's inaccurate, but sometimes that's the amount of data you have to go for on decisions, you know, and like, it's nice to be able to run those queries really quickly and get a good idea. I mean, I'm running those constantly when I was looking at our data structure, right? How many rows are there? You know, how many, okay, well, roughly how many of those are linked? If I do a join, roughly how long is that going to take me? You know, I mean, like, just getting quick, like, just ballpark numbers that don't have to be accurate, or don't have to be really, really constrained. It's super, super useful to be making assumptions about how certain things will go. And in general, just being able to run things that too, like running the timing of things, you know, recently I ran across a video where, you know, there's so much emphasis on O-log again. And of course, like, I understand that fundamentally is a principle, of course, but the reality is that, you know, there's a lot of things that run better on linear, even if it doesn't make sense. And the reason for that is that RAM is so incredibly optimized for linear search that sometimes it performs better, which is just, you know, anathema to anybody who just crunches lead code and doesn't like. And I mean, by and large, it's incorrect. But I would say, like, the ability to quickly just test things and like measure query times and take in that data and like make shitty guesses, but educated as much as they can be. Like, drafting. I mean, honestly, like, a huge portion of programming for me now, like, from an architectural level, is just drafting, right? Like, throwing things out there, see what they do, like, see. You know, see how certain changes impact our data structure and stuff. And yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, being able to like work quickly and gather data about what you might be doing and make some quick like kind of adjustments and assessments and check your kind of first principles is so useful.
Yeah, I'll add an addendum to that. It's like, you know, the command line is good and PSQL and stuff, but eventually, like, your company will set up. They'll have some logging things like Elasticsearch or Kibana, or for us, we use Honeycomb, which I had never used before, but it was like one of the first things I went and was like, okay, this is cool. Like, our metrics are here. Here are our traces, like all of these useful things that it's like, okay, when an incident occurs, okay, I'm going to go to Honeycomb. I'm going to start looking for, you know, where in the logs did the screw up happen? Like, what happened? And being able to use those tools and understand them is also a skill.
Especially when you're working with like large sets of data. I don't think we're at like the scale where we're doing that, but like, man, yeah. Searchable logs, underrated for sure.
I'm going to rattle off like maybe a couple, or at least one pretty cliche one, and maybe it's not underrated. I don't know, but maybe it's obvious, but asking questions, just not kind of, you know, being siloed in your own pain or just ignorance, getting a second opinion, getting a second look. Something I really enjoy about Dane and working with him is, even though I am, you know, I'm not as experienced, but I appreciate is whenever he's working on something and I'm doing something, separately, he'll always ask like if I could offer an opinion on something or take a look at something, or when I'm kind of in the weeds and I get stuck, or even if we're just going pair programming and working on something together and we're flying and I try to, like, you know, if I don't know what's happening or something, we're going, there's some kind of new concept, instead of just kind of flying by and just being like, oh, I can intuit what that might be, what, no matter how simple it is, I think there's always like, I've never asked a question that I regretted. I don't know. That was like, oh, that was so stupid for me to ask that question. And I think that speaks to also being, I know it's hard, you know, depending on your work environment or where you work or what your team's like, you know, can be varying degrees of challenging, but hopefully you're not in a work environment where you are working with people that you cannot do that. Because I think that's a very valuable asset in a team, as being able to bounce things off each other. And I would hope that, you know, most people get to be in a work environment that they have the ability to do that.
Yeah. I would definitely piggyback off that one and say that, you know, not just asking questions, like really being willing to like leave your pride at the door or your ego at the door and just be like, I don't know what the fuck this is and I need some help.
Yeah.
Here's what I know, here's what I don't like. Because like you said, otherwise you're just going to sit there and swallow in your own misery and get absolutely nowhere. So yeah, I think that's a really good one. It made me think too, one that I was kind of thinking about, and you guys can tell me how you feel about this, but like, I think that a highly underrated skill is a very strong vocabulary. And what I mean by that is, let's say I go to stand up in the morning and I talk to my lead or the other engineers and I'm describing a problem or a situation. I'm going to describe that very differently than how I'm going to describe that to my product owner. And the solution to that problem or the problem itself, I'm going to describe again differently if I have to give a presentation on it to leadership. And again differently if I have to give a presentation on it to everybody in the company at like a show and tell. So being able to think about a technical concept and break it down in a variety of ways that's easily digestible to people is, I think, immensely helpful. Like even for me, like if I'm working with our senior and he's talking about some really high level stuff and I need to be like, bro, you gotta take it down on my level. I'm not quite as big brain as you are. And he can adjust and kind of turn that technical volume down and kind of put it into basic terms. And it's like, oh, I think that's a super, super underrated.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I think just being able to describe something you did, like just being able to articulate something that, you know, a concept, a feature, that is just that's a pretty valuable skill. And that's a really good one.
Yeah, I'll add, I don't know if this is kind of an addendum to that. It just kind of made me think of the fact that I think a hugely underrated skill, when I tackle a problem, I break it down into the parts I can and can't solve. And usually I'll solve the parts that I can, that I know, and then I'll move on. So what's nice is like, it doesn't look as if it's always this Herculean task, right? I just start biting off the pieces that I can. And even if it's not linear, right? I mean, sometimes there's like, I need to do this before I can do this, but I know how to do this part. So let me just write a function for that really quickly. And then like be able to keep that. I think that's a super underrated skill, because you're just chunking away the things, you know, and then you can deal with the big parts, right? Like once you deal with the big parts, like those are the hard problems and you work through them, but you get kind of wind sprinkled in there. And I think like then the problem itself becomes a lot smaller as you kind of like solve one tiny part of it and continue on. And alongside that, the ability to break something down. Because when I'm thinking about a problem, it's really quite stupid how I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking like, okay, I have a front end. It is making a request, right? Okay, does the request meet the back end? Okay, cool. The route that I wrote is receiving that request. Okay, now that I have this request, I want to query the database. Like, I am really thinking like that the whole time. And then occasionally it'll get in this thing where it's like, oh, on this behavior when using concurrent, blah, 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 and then like this, blah, blah, blah. And that always happens, you know, and then I get deep in the docs or whatever. But honestly, I think like a 5-year-old when I'm, for the most part, when I'm architecting. And then the other, I'm not necessarily architecting, but like writing or like the basic things. And the nice thing is that, yeah, like I could see they were like, oh, I could know ahead of time. Oh, well, how am I going to deal with the concurrency primitives? And oftentimes I do, right? Or like, how am I going to deal with this problem? Or like the way that this data is modeled? Like, I don't know, but no matter what, I'm going to have to make an HTTP request from the front end, receive it on the back end, and do some stuff with the database. Like it makes the problem so much more digestible.
The best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time.
You don't know that.
Yeah, prove you don't
it.
Know that.
Prove
yeah.
it right now. Can't prove that with Vim, can you? Just colon Q to your ad.
Oh my
so
God.
Salty.
But in software development, though, like you're eating the elephant and then there you have a product manager directly behind you who's feeding you more elephant while
she's
you're
like, eat faster,
the elephant.
Eat yeah, faster, you
like,
fool.
But you're like, but if I eat this elephant, then that elephant will take longer. And they're like, nope.
No, Dan,
can you
I
eat two elephants
100%.
At the same time?
I 100% agree with what you're saying. I think that's hugely important. And even just like being able to really be honest with yourself about your own capabilities. Like, I mean, obviously everyone works like different styles, like some do Kanban, some do like agile. But you know, somebody pulls up a task and they're like, hey, you know, how many points is this? Like everyone's tempted to be like, oh, that's a 1. It should probably be a 3 or a 5. Like, or you break it up into smaller tasks. Like that's a whole skill in itself.
Yeah. I have one, which is knowing the right level of engineering a problem requires. I think a lot of people immediately start jumping to code and seeing how, like, solve it with code, solve it with code, solve it with code. It's like, well, do we need to solve it with code? Is this really in a problem? And knowing, like, the level of, like, under or over engineering a problem needs. Like, I think that's a skill. I've seen both ends of the spectrum of like, this was clearly under engineered and is not able to meet the capabilities. And then I've experienced the opposite of like, this is extremely over engineered and is not necessary for the use case that we have.
The coffee maker
really
doesn't
hard.
Need a cron job.
Yeah, exactly.
I enjoy pressing the button. That's my small solace. That's my one interaction with the real world today. Please don't take that from me. No, I totally agree. I was talking to my younger brother is like doing an e-commerce thing for a friend. And then he hits me up and he messaged me on Discord and he was like, hey, I was just wondering, you know, I have this one thing. Do I want to create? So when I create the database table for products, and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I mean, like, yeah. So then I'm gonna have to create accounts and then everyone's gonna have to an account. And I was like, okay, like let's simmer down. Like, have you considered Shopify? Right? Have you considered, right? And it's so funny because I think that's people who are more junior, like, oh, I know JavaScript, right? Like, I'll never learn the liquid templating language. Like, I'll never use, you know, Shopify. I'll never do themes for that. But like, honestly, I would rather do that than write an entire backend account management system, like, overnight or, you know what I mean? And I know that, like, yes, you can hash your passwords, like, but it's just having an application in production and seeing how immediately, like, everyone should just hop on, get like open their port and just listen on their open port and just see how long it takes to get hits from people going for like old PHP exploits or like I mean, dude, like if you have your stuff on the public internet, it is crazy the volume of just bots you have crawling, looking for different exploits, like openings. Like, I mean, it's like, oh man, it's like getting out on the dance floor. Like it's brutal. And so it's just funny how like my thing was like, no, look, listen, you're gonna try and find services that do as much as possible for you, you know, because I was like, you know, when you're dealing with clients, the number one thing, like, they're gonna want to be able to change things and have some control over it. Doesn't matter if it's the most beautiful website in the world, they're expecting WordPress, right? Like or like a WordPressy concept, some sort of CMS. So like, take care of that. So like, yeah, like I think that's an example of like over engineering. I think when you first start out, especially at a bootcamp and stuff, you're like, oh, I can do everything. Like once you get to a certain level of skill, like I tackled challenges. I was like, you know, eventually maybe it wasn't the best implementation, but everything I set out to do, I eventually did. And then after maturing a little bit more as a developer, I feel like I looked back on it. I was like, now the first thing, anytime somebody comes to me, I'm like, is this worth doing at all? Like, do I want to do this? And if I do, what parts of it do I want to do? And what parts can I not do? Preferably. Maybe that's cynicism, but I really do think knowing what it's like to build systems like that and knowing the work that goes in there, like just because you know the direction from A to B doesn't mean it isn't going to take 70 hours to get there.
Yeah, one of my mentors, one of the like most favorite things he's said was the user doesn't care about your tech stack. And that's like when you realize it, you're like, oh, okay, like what is the simplest way I can solve this that solves it completely? Which is hard, but definitely a skill.
Yeah, I do want to just take a step back here because it sounds like you had an experience on a dance floor that we need to dig into just a little bit. Like, what was that about? did you have a situation in your path where you tried to dance and you pulled like the Elaine Bennett in Seinfeld, like when she does like the dance?
No, dude, I'm a great dancer. I'm just appealing to our audience. Okay. It's a technical podcast. I assume not a lot of us are great dancers. I'm a fantastic dancer. Okay.
And apparently attracts many, many fans on the floor.
Yeah, maybe you should ask apparently.
Maybe you should ask your niece, bro.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That's right. I went there.
She's just, all right, podcast over. Gotta go, guys. Anybody got any other ones?
Yeah, so with knowing the right amount of engineering, it kind of sounds like, Brandon, this is kind of similar, but just made me think of this, and Dane was kind of alluding to it too, but it's kind of in the same vein as knowing the right tool for the right job and I like how you said that your mentor had mentioned that the user doesn't care what your tech stack is. It's like, yeah, it's like, that's a really good point. And so depending on, obviously when you're considering building something and, creating something, it's something to consider, how much time do you have? Is this something that, like Dane's brother in the instance where it's like, all right, he's making this cool site for a friend of his. If time is not an option or is not, something that is super concerning, then yeah, there can be more thought put into maybe some of the tools or the stack, and you could be more creative with maybe some things you want to try out or, new things. But if there is a time crunch or you're at work and you have something that's due, you don't always have that luxury. And so having the ability to know what the right tool is for the right job. And sometimes that tool isn't always a technical tool, but it's also just, and just depends on what it is, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. It's true. The user doesn't care about your tech stack, but that doesn't mean that your tech stack doesn't matter. It does. and being able to, yeah, it's always such a challenge of like choosing the right technologies and how to make those decisions is always tricky. But yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, the user doesn't care about your tech stack, but they care how quickly your application works. I mean, even maybe if it's not conscious, but like, I mean, there's a lot of, there are definitely times where I see two products. One is more feature rich and the other one is simpler, but it's just faster and the UI is better and it wins out time over time. I mean, speed is a part of user experience, right? You can't separate the two, and like tech stack plays into that for sure. But it's just finding that like right level of engineering. I'll add one, which is modularization, just across the board.
Ooh, yeah.
Knowing when something can be self-contained and knowing how to like create logical spaces for things and what belongs with what. And like, and I really feel like it's so funny because I think that this is probably one of the most important skills. And yet I feel like OOP, which really, 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 really tried to get it right, completely screwed the pooch on this one. It's funny because like it all came from the right thought process, right? Like, and that's unfair. It didn't completely. You have like contracts, interfaces, and those kind of abstractions that are super useful. And I get that, like private and but I just, it's wild to me. Like Elixir is straight up just, you have modules and modules have functions. You can put them whatever order you like in any file, like, cause it's a global name, you know, kind of like a global namespace. Not technically because they're processes, but it actually, what's cool about Elixir for those who want to know, defining a module creates like a supervision tree in like a distributed model, which is pretty cool. Mm. Yeah, it's actually super hot. But outside of that, like, I mean, like, it's so crazy to me though, how like clean I feel our code is with just that ability to basically define like more or less namespaces and the functions in those namespaces. Things stay really, really tight, and you can abstract the details so much, but like knowing when to modularize something, knowing when to put something away. And that this goes on with another point that I had, which is I really think an underrated skill is writing less code. And I don't mean that you like are using K instead of like the actual variable name that makes sense to human beings. I mean like the ability to write really concise and simple code. I mean, I guess maybe it's not underrated, but I feel like I said earlier, I'm in this position where I feel like I can mostly do everything that I've tried to with some struggling and weeks sometimes and days other times and seconds other times. Right. But man, like I've written some ugly code doing that. And I just think being able to write really, really simple modularized code is worth sitting there and not getting lines out, which once again is going to go against the like conventional wisdom of like just burn down. But I think that's a shitty metric, honestly. I think burn down charts are dumb.
Yeah, it's I think that goes hand in hand with kind of what we've been saying, but knowing just the right level for solutions, for problems, for what you're doing, for the actual code. I'll add on to that. I think we've mentioned this before in a previous episode, but like file hygiene is a good one. I don't think that's necessarily an underrated skill, but it's a skill, and it feels terrible when you work in a code base that doesn't have it and everything is kind of everywhere. Or the other thing that I hate is when you organize code by like type and not function. So you're just like, oh, I'm going to put all the database models together and I'll put all the controllers together. And then when you're working on a feature, you have like 5 to 10 folders open of like all the different things you need. And you're like, this is terrible. Like just have a massive file tree open, but I'm only working like one file that has something small, but like, yeah, that's one thing that always bothers me. Like, put your code when it makes sense, group it by feature. And then when you're working on that feature, all the code is right there and easy to find.
Right. Hopefully. And then like, you know, it blends into modularity, right? Like having sensible imports, right?
And like knowing when to make things like, okay, this is a general util that I can kind of use everywhere. Being able to extract that out and stuff like that, for sure. I have a like small one, and this for me, this is more of like a nitpick, but like touch typing, I think is a pretty important skill.
Do people not touch type?
Oh man,
what is that?
Not having to look at the keyboard when you're typing.
I had to work with a developer who would chicken peck. Like he literally used two fingers to type. He was so slow. It was awful. Great guy, great developer, but constantly backlogged with stuff to do.
You have to pair program with him. I think that's what would drive me.
I didn't have to pair program, but he was on my team.
Pair programming would be horrible.
Well, hold on. I didn't even think that's just, you're kind of blowing my mind right now.
Found the non-touch typist. I'm just
What? No, I'm definitely whatever. We're not talking about me right now.
Without looking at your keyboard, where's the tilde?
And my escape key.
Okay, yeah, you're right. It's an Anpro too. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But I'm not saying this to be rude. I'm not saying this like to be. I'm just asking questions here. That sounds terrible too. Never mind. I'm not going to ask anymore about anything about this.
I was going to say that's somebody how like somebody would preface like maybe a racist comment. Like,
yeah, I realize I'm just like better. It's better.
I'm not trying to upset anyone. I'm just trying to ask questions. Okay,
yeah, you're right.
NASA didn't create the dome,
this is an idea that I've had for like a really great Twitter bot that would like flag and like say something for certain phrases, and I was going to call it the I'm not racist bot, and it would just find every query that starts with I'm not racist but.
Oh,
if you have to prefix it that, it's not good.
Oh
damn,
what was your comment, Jimmy?
Yeah,
I guess I'm just surprised. Like, I didn't even think that was a thing. Like, I guess my point is that maybe that person just had never mind. I don't know. I'm just curious, like, how just so literally two fingers.
To be clear,
just,
he wasn't he's not disabled or anything. Like, he was a perfectly functioning human being who just refused to learn how to type faster.
Twist was that he only had two fingers in front of
him. No, this was pre-COVID, so I know he had all 10 fingers. For sure.
Oh my God. Damn. Hey,
but if you think about it, he could do ally, you know, like the frame with his fingers. I'm just saying. Kind of like the blood, like the gang symbol.
Oh my God.
So first of all, to pivot away from whatever's happening here, but an understanding of accessibility is huge.
Oh, like, yeah.
And not just I know what accessibility is. Like, I challenge every single one of you, if you have not done this, try to navigate a page through a screen reader.
Yeah, I've done it. Yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare on like 99% of sites. It gave me, like, before I was already pretty gung-ho about accessibility, but now I am like I am a nightmare for everyone at work, because I'm just like, that is going to sound awful, or that is going to look terrible, or it's just, I don't know, man. Accessibility is becoming such a bigger thing now, which is great, but still so many people just have no concept of what it must be like for someone who's visually impaired to navigate 99% of the internet.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
I agree. I also think that, you know, in a weird way, just like following like UX and UI patterns leads to like a better design somehow, even though those aren't necessarily linked. Like, I feel like making things more accessible, especially when it comes to, we'll say contrast specifically, right? And running those contrast tools makes everything way more usable for people who are, you know, we'll say, I don't know what the term would be. So like red, green color blindness, right?
Yeah.
So if you make things compliant for red, green color blindness, I've come down and like checked the contrast and I was like, this looks way better to me who is not red, green color blind. Because I think that there's some level of like, It making it better for everyone makes it even better for like people who maybe aren't, you know, don't have handicaps or anything like that. There's really no reason not to do it. I think it's a win-win.
I completely agree. Like even like outside of the moral argument for it, you got to remember something like 10% of the world is affected visually with some form of blindness, you know, ranging on a scale. So if you can't bring like the moral argument to it, it's a business argument. You want to miss out on 10% of the market? Good luck.
Right. Yeah. Or even talking about like text sizing and relative text sizing. There's a lot of people who have nearsighted
dyslexia stuff, and making fonts more like readable stuff, like they're like having like something I noticed. I'll notice some sites that do this where they have like they have a literal like accessibility tools at your fingertips, like when you get to the site, whether it's on mobile or even on desktop, that immediately stick out. So it's like, okay, if that's an option or something that you need help with, or it's pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say like edge knowledge like that is huge, because it's not something that's very unlikely to come up in an interview, but it is like you should know that stuff for sure.
This one's, I don't know if it's underrated. I don't even know if it, I don't know what to call this, but something that that sparked maybe the inspiration for this episode was naming conventions. And I'm curious your guys' opinions on this.
I wouldn't even say it was so much naming conventions as much as it was like, because naming conventions gets a little technical. Just naming things properly, just naming them in a way that it makes sense to the person who will go back and have to read it. Like if you write really good names, you have to document way less.
It's
really hard skill. I think it's the skill I'd like to develop most, but I have no idea how to actually do it other than just keep slamming into it over again. I think every time I go back to code I wrote like a year and a half ago, and I'm like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. Like, this was not a good name. Like, I don't really know how else to practice it. Other than, like I said, Joey was saying earlier, I often be like, hey, does this make sense to you? That check-in is like really useful for me to get like a different, you know, different brain on it and be like, oh, that, does this make sense to you? Can you read this?
Yeah.
And it seems like.
Go ahead.
It seems something like easy or like on its face. It's like, what do you mean? Like, what's so hard? You're like, oh, like I remember not. I don't know. But when you finally get to like your first project or something you're working on, where it's a little, I don't know, you're working with multiple types of data or anything that's kind of like when you work with things that are closely named, like you can find way in your mind, like you can see like multiple ways that this word could be interpreted, and it starts to get a little like, I don't know. It can quickly get messy or become unintelligible.
So I just to make a point of this, I pulled up and no offense, Spring Boot. Just kidding. 100% offense. I'm straight up just reading from the documentation. Okay, this is like I'm on page one of their API docs. Abstract beans of type depends on database initialization detector. Fuck that, dude. Fuck ever working with that ever. That's ridiculous. That's out of control. That's definitely like a Jurassic Park situation. Like, they never stop to think. Nobody should have ever written that ever. That makes no sense. I don't care if you know Spring Boot and you've been using it for 500 years, there's no way that makes intuitive sense to you. It is not human.
It is not human.
Yeah, so I'm curious, what like, do you guys have like a hard and fast rule for how you name specific things?
Not that. I mean, no. Like, if it exceeds 32 characters, something's really desperately wrong.
Agreed.
But like, for example, if you're working, like we're working on something that deals with contact information, and that information is related to a home or a property or an address. And so very quickly in your variables or in your functions, the word, the thing that you're trying to get from the thing could easily be interpreted by, okay, well, is properties the right name for this? Well, probably not. And so like, there's just like weird little like abstracting away, but also having enough context for the thing is, I think, can be challenging sometimes. Like I will find myself literally like I did it today, but it's not the first time I've done this, but I've like found myself like literally looking up a thesaurus, like synonyms for certain words. Cause I'm like, oh, what's a better way to maybe write this like name of this function or this thing. And I just think it's funny cause it's not something I ever really, I don't know. It's just a funny skill that I think being able to have readable, just stuff that's readable. I mean, it's pretty important.
Yeah. So just because I want to finish my point, I don't think I made it clear the first time. I did find the longest Spring Boot API class name I could find. Are you guys ready for this?
Oh, God.
Embedded web server factory customizer auto configuration undertow web server factory customizer configuration.
What?
I mean, it seems simple enough.
Dude.
What is, for the uninitiated, what is Spring Boot?
It's a Java web framework. Oh, Spring Boot is great. To be fair, Spring Boot solves a lot of problems with the Java ecosystem. Like, not the shit on Spring Boot. I'm assuming these are problems of the fact of the paradigm. But if I ever saw that in a code base, I promise you I would quit that day. I promise you, beyond any shadow of a doubt. If I saw that, I was like, this is beyond human. And that's the reason we write programming languages, so that humans can read them. Otherwise, we'd all be writing assembly. Like, it's just it's absolutely out of control. So naming things, very important. I'd put it that in like top five skills, period. Like that I would say, like, that's something I would really love to work on. Like, and I don't really know how to work on it.
I mean, yeah, how does this old programming adage, there are only two problems that are actually hard in programming, which is naming things, caching, and off by one errors. Like, yeah, naming is hard. Yeah.
For a second, I was like, that's too, oh.
I love that joke so much. Not mine, but yeah, it's a great one.
Great joke, and also true. Like, in spite of knowing where arrays start sometimes, also that's not in every language, like, there, I committed an egregious amount of off by one errors. I just have red flags. Whenever I do like brackets zero, I'm like, it's almost a code smell. Like, acting index of zero, I'm like, oh, this is starting to stink.
Very true. I was going to also add, you know, you kind of you touched on it briefly, which was comments, like how to write good comments, I think is for sure a skill. I think knowing when to and when to not write a comment. I've definitely seen like comments where I'm like, this is just a rehash of what the code itself is saying, which I think when you have
good patronizing names,
yeah, I'm like,
play off each other.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, if you have good names and like your code is not like, you're not getting clever with your code, like if you just write dumb code for better or for worse, like it's easier to read and then your comments should really be focusing not on like what is happening. The code itself should be able to explain that. And instead write comments on like why and how were these decisions made? I think is a lot better way of an approach. Yeah, that's how I approach it now.
I think generally, like, if you, and this kind of goes back to what I said earlier too about having like a really good vocabulary, kind of like what Joey was talking about, where it's like, oh, do I use property? Do I use house? Do I use homestead, estate? Like, what's it going to be? Land parcel?
Yeah.
But you start with that vocabulary, and then you have like a set of rules for, like, for me, it's like functions are verbs. Functions are things that do things. Variables are things. They're nouns. So that's how, like, mm-hmm. functions are get this or do that. Variables are noun, path, route, URL, whatever it is.
Sacrilege.
And from there. Oh, sorry. What was that? Couldn't hear you over the clacking of your Vim commands.
Sacrilege.
But if you follow that, suddenly you don't really have to comment a whole lot. Like, or at least I don't, unless I'm doing some super complex pattern with like regular expressions or some wild parsing or something like that.
Right. Yeah. I document my decisions in my comments. Like, and, yeah. And sometimes I'm not going to lie when like, I'll be like this, I'll be like, look, I did it this way and it works. Here's why it's not ideal. And I would like to fix it. Here are some suggestions, like some thoughts I had about mm-hmm. fixing this. And like that, then that'll be that. When I come across code and they're like the function add, they're like this adds, I'm like, are you insulting me, bro? Like, do you want to go? Like, those are the worst kind of comments where it's like this function called add and replace adds and replaces. And I'm like, oh man. Thanks for committing those extra bits to our code base that did nothing but insult every human being who reads it.
For an April Fool's joke at a previous company, I opened a pull request, which was just dumb comments like that, and then I individually went person by person and asked them to review it, and then they were all like, fuck you, dude. My April Fool's joke.
That's hilarious.
That is really good. Any other underrated dev skills? We could probably easily do this for like another hour, I know. But alas, we cannot. But this was fun. This could easily be like another episode for sure.
Yeah.
Do we have time for one more Spring Boot?
Absolutely.
That's ready. Okay. Transaction auto configuration enabled transaction management configuration JDK dynamic auto proxy configuration.
We should just end the episode just fading out of Dane reading one of those.
I think that'd be great.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it just doesn't like something is desperately wrong. I feel like this is like, oh man, I don't. Okay. So this is going to be a bit of a tangent, but I can play us out on this, cause it'll be a nice soft skills conversation. So when I was in school, we started to discover in biology, we talk about how they discovered like thyroxine and like thyroid hormones that have to do with the way that we like perceive sunlight and stuff. And what they did is they figured out that if they cut the eyes off of crabs, they don't molt anymore. And that's how we figured out that, you know, sunlight was really important for these kind of like these seasonal behaviors, right? Okay. Why did they have to cut the eyes off crabs, right? Why did they just cut? I feel like there were so many better ways. And this whole what auto configurator blah 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 14 things, you're cutting the eyes off the crabs. Okay, you messed up a long time ago. You need to rethink your approach entirely.
Like what is that, like scary movie? I figured it out. Without their heads, they're powerless.
Exactly. Like this is rough. And I, to be clear, Spring Boot I've heard is amazing, and everyone I know who works with Java likes it. It's not their fault. I'm sure they're just, you know, not. They just have to deal with what they were given, which is something to do with beans.
Beans.
Beans. Well, dear listener, if you believe there are any underrated skills or overrated skills that are dev related, you can always send us an email at hello@codebrew.io.
Is there a question mark on the end of that? Why did you?
I didn't prepare. I just was rattling this off. I knew I wanted someone to email us to just let us
add that to the list. Preparation is an undervalued skill.
Can we?
That's right.
Did we get any emails recently? Can we shout anybody out?
We did get one. I didn't ask their permission. It wasn't really one directly, but we did get one recently that was resume related, just wanted to I'm not going to read the email or anything or mention the person's name, but they really liked our resume episode and wanted some examples that of our resumes that we used to get our first dev jobs. So that was cool. But yeah, other than that, it's been a little quiet on the email front, probably because I haven't figured out what our email address is. But
email us. I love hearing from the emails. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah, if you have questions, episode ideas, things you want to know about, send us an email. Joey's gonna read them.
hello@codebrew.fm
.fm.
My goodness.
FM like the radio.
Right.
Nobody knows what that means anymore. Yeah,
that really is. Yeah, that is. The funny thing is, I think I mentioned this. I don't know if I mentioned our email's not even on our website, which is funny. But I got to make a pull request. You know?
Yeah, make a pull request. Like, you're completely capable of doing that. Nice. What are you, a product manager?
Yeah, what's the turnaround time on that, Joey?
Why don't you add that to the burn down chart?
Priority level.
You're gonna have to go get your Scrum Master certificate in order to go over here when you just make a pull request, bro. What are you talking about? That's your job.
All right. By next time we record, I'll add that to the Kanban.
We don't need a Kanban. Just make the pull request. Like,
right. Yeah, it's literally like, no one's doling out work here. Just do it.
It's literally, I could do it in the time we've been talking about it.
I know. I'm just joking. All right. Well, thanks for listening to this week's episode.
Like the spring boot of human beings.
Abstract annotation initializer format.
All right, we'll catch you on the next one.